Hey, welcome to the podcast. Big day here at Blaze TV. Steven Crowder returns. It's a new season, a new attitude with Steven Crowder. You don't want to miss it.
His teaser promo?
No, I
didn't. It's awesome. You have to see it. It starts today. It's back on new season today. Go to blazetv.com/Beck. Use the promo code Beck, and it'll save you $10 on your annual subscription. But, I mean, it's not just us. It's not just Crowder. I mean, we have dozens of shows now. We just added two new ones. Matt Kibbe with a new show. Chad Prather with a new show.
Humor me with Chad Prather. If you don't know who Chad Prather is, look him up. He's somebody you need to know. He's selling out theaters all across the country. He's a singer and comedian, it's great. So he's got a new show called Humor Me. It's coming up.
So join the fun.
All right. BlazeTV.com/Beck. Use the promo code Beck. Save 10%. All right. On the podcast today. Oh, my gosh. Nancy Pelosi is punishing America with the possibility of maybe canceling the State of the Union.
I'm terrified, Glenn. I can't lose that event. It's the biggest part of my year.
Well, we got to get into that a little bit. Also, women's poll. We took a poll of our audience on toxic femininity. This actually comes from a post on Medium, really well written by a woman who said, "You're never going to have any success unless we also address toxic femininity." So we took 11 of our listeners, put them on the phone, and asked them questions that are mind-blowing.
Yeah.
The answers that they gave, lots of fun and mind-blowing. Also, Steve Dace, Justin is popping in with a look at the economy and what's happening in China, and what I like to call the adult Disneyland. Walmart, all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Field of Greens, a product that is a real superfood. I mean, superfood is really ridiculous. You look at the container and it has supplement facts. Well, if it has supplements, then it's not a superfood, man. It means that it's a bunch of stuff ground up and then they put a bunch of other stuff in it to make it a superfood. Brickhouse Nutrition, they've created Field of Greens, and it's real superfood. You look at it, it just says nutrition facts. It doesn't have any supplement facts. It's nutrition because it's an actual superfood. One scoop of Field of Greens has a full serving of real certified vegan, vegetarian, and USDA organic fruits and vegetables, complete with prebiotics, probiotics, and antioxidants. It's your daily clean energy fueled by fruits and vegetables for a better year this year. Try it now. BrickHouseGlen.com. Go there now. BrickHouseGlen.com. Use the promo code Glenn. Get 15% off your first order. BrickHouseGlen.com and experience a better you tomorrow. There's one tradition that I just love, and that is when we all gather around the old set and we watch the State of the Union. Oh, the fun times and fun memories that brings back every year. I hate that. It's one of the worst things ever. It's nothing but a really lousy show. It's state-run television. That's what that is.
That's what it feels like.
It is. It is. And you know, it's like, you know, it's like America's Got Talent or something like that, where you know the outcome. You know these judges are going to hate it and these judges are going to love it. Every time.
It's a giant show, and I feel like it's completely inconsistent with the foundations of our country. Like, we don't revere leaders like this. We don't, it's not pomp and circumstance here. And, like, this is the perfect time for Trump to just say, you know what? You're right. It's back to a letter.
I love that.
I would love for him to do that.
The Constitution says that the president... I think it even says from time to time.
Time to time, or occasion. Yeah, I think it is
it's
from time to time.
It's not even supposed to be like every January you got to do this. It's from time to time. The president needs to inform the Congress the State of the Union. It needs to say, hey, things kind of suck over here and are pretty good over there. Mm-hmm. It's always been a letter, I think, until either Wilson or FDR, of course.
I think there was maybe one or two exceptions to that. It's an interesting history, actually. But it was never supposed to be... It was never supposed to be. Look, believe me. It was never supposed to be like this. It was supposed to be basically an actual report of what the hell was going on in the country.
Correct. That's it.
And here's a couple ideas of how I think we could fix it.
Right. So it's turned into this giant show. And now Nancy Pelosi, as a punishment, this is how out of touch they are, as a punishment for shutting down the government, says, you know what? Maybe we won't invite you to give a State of the Union. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Please.
He doesn't need a State of the Union. The guy tweets and all you do is talk about it for 6 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, we got it. We got it. Oh, boo-hoo. Now, this again hurts us because we've done a lot of planning. We've got a really good State of the Union broadcast with all hands on deck at the Blaze. Eric Bolling is in Washington with all of the experts. We're going to be based here, checking in with all of the Blaze staff.
Yeah, but bad for us, good for the country.
Yeah,
I'm happy.
Great for the country. Now, the other side of this, can you hear it in my voice? I'm kind of excited that this might not happen. You know, that the president's not going to give up and give that boring speech every year that every president gives and we all hate. And you've paid me for 40 years. For 40 years, I have been paid to watch that damn speech. I've watched all of them for 40 years. I hate them. You're still paying me to watch it. And it's like, this year, you know what, Glenn? You may not have to watch it. Oh, please. Thank you. So, part of it's good for me. Part of it's bad for me, but great for America.
People say we don't give Democrats credit when they have good ideas.
Here's
one.
Nancy.
Yes.
I love this idea.
What a wonderful idea, Nancy.
This is their punishment. I love this. Okay, so if you decide to do it, Mr. President, you should encourage them not to show up. Now, I don't know exactly how the Constitution works to where if the president says, I'm going to do it, you don't have to show up. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do my constitutional duty. I think it would be even more fun if they didn't show up.
It's doing it in an empty room. That would be very, it might, the optics of that might feel a little weird. Like it,
doing it just for the GOP? Yeah. Who do you think wins?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. For the GOP. They'd all be cheering for
everything.
Who do you think wins?
Yeah. We're showing up to do our job.
I just said the speech in the empty room is what I was picturing, but you're right. If the GOP shows up, they're going to be clapping for everything.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine if Donald Trump had Ronald Reagan's skill? No president has had Ronald Reagan's skill, but if Donald Trump had Ronald Reagan's skill in an empty chamber, just to walk in and himself go, Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States. And then they open up the doors and it's just him. And he's just walking down. He's got a lapel microphone and he just starts talking to the American people as he's walking down that aisle and just says, look, the government is closed because we can't get our act together on the border. We can't do things that will protect you. So nobody showed up. But you know what? This is supposed to be a letter anyway to Congress. So I wrote them a letter. I don't know if they're ever going to read it because they don't really read stuff around here. I don't know if you've noticed that. But I just wanted to sit and talk to you for a minute. And then don't go behind that podium. Just sit in one of the chairs that they normally sit in. Just don't sit with the American flag, or just kind of prop yourself up next to that podium and just say, so listen, I'm going to only keep you for 5 minutes. This is what has to happen. That would be epic.
And then the 5 minutes should be about term limits. All these people who didn't even bother to show up to do their jobs today, all of them should be out. Get them out of here. They can't sit here, and we're not going to pay them for the next 100 years like they usually want.
In fact, don't even talk about the border. Don't talk about anything.
Yeah.
Just say, look, I'm only going to keep you for 5 minutes. We can't get some common sense stuff down that you know. And honestly, your neighbors who are Democrats, they know it too. And they're sick of this. And I've seen the polling. There should be term limits. There's term limits on me, on the president, because nobody should have that much power for that long. These people, some of these people have been here since 1973. Now, Ted Cruz has put together a deal, and with your help, if I said this in front of them, you know, half the room would stand up and applaud. The other half would sit stoic. And if the last president would have proposed what I'm proposing, they would have switched sides. But you want to know one thing? It wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen because it's a restriction on them. So I'm just asking you, let's get this done.
Yeah, it's among the most popular thing that is in public opinion. I mean, it's something like 83% of people agree with term limits for Congress. It is more popular among Republicans by a decent margin than the border wall is. That's how popular term limits are. And you're also getting in the mid-70s of Democrats who agree with it. Talking about getting people who could, you know, and I think Cruz's is worded, I believe, 3 terms in Congress and 2 terms in the Senate. And then you're done.
That's enough.
That's already 18 years.
Yeah.
And you could still run for president afterwards.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's plenty of opportunities.
I don't even think it should be that long. But that 18 years.
I mean, he's I think, being pragmatic here and saying, you know, if you make it too short, no one's going to vote for it. But still, 18 years is plenty of time for you to be in the government. Your working life is from 20 to, say, 70.
I'm sorry.
You're talking about 20 to 60. Half your working life.
This is one problem we do have with the Constitution, and that is the Constitution was not written for a Congress that was seated year-round. The Constitution was written for a Congress that showed up in the summer and did a couple months of work and then left.
And did real jobs. Yes.
Okay. They should not have the power over their own salary and over their own jobs. I mean, look, the president, you think the president would have ever said, yeah, you know what, term limits on me?
Right. There needed to be someone who enforced it
on the outside.
The right.
Right. Why are we expecting these people who would say, you know what? I know, I'm here and I'm doing a great job right now. And inside, you know, I'm really not doing a great job right now. But you say to your boss, I'm doing a great job right now. But you know what? In 10 years, you should fire me. No one would say that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, every time you bring up term limits, there's somebody who says, well, you know, the problem is that lobbyists will be in control. Have you watched Washington lately? What do you think's happening now? These people have made 40-year relationships with lobbyists.
It's horrible.
Who are writing the bills for them. At least it would be new people they had to convince again.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. The toxic femininity problem in America. Is it actually an issue? By the way, if you're hearing hammering and saws, it's actually 4 stories above me. We've had to replace the roof of our studio complex, and it's a massive complex. It's going to take us about 90 days, and so you will hear things in the background, unfortunately. I apologize for this.
It's not Jeffy having a moment.
Yeah. Kind of I know. Last night we were doing one of the shows and it sounded like we had piled a bunch of, you know, lactose intolerant elephants up on the roof. But anyway, toxic femininity. There is an article on Medium that talks about, from a woman who says, if I got a group of my friends together and they all talked about the truth, they would all answer yes to most, if not all, of these questions. I find this hard to believe, but we have 12 people on the phone. They're from the ages of 35 to 70. It may be different below 35, but we'll see. This group is 35 to 70 years old, 12 different people. Can we conference call all of them together?
Do we have the technology?
Do we have the technology? I'm not sure. Now, here's the thing.
Never attempted this in the studio.
As we put all of them together, ladies, please do not identify yourself in any way other than your number. Because some of the questions get a little dicey, and we just want to make sure that nobody is revealing anything that everybody else goes, what? So here we go. We're going to start from number 1 to number 12. Don't identify yourself in any way, but we just want an honest answer on these questions. Here's question number 1.
Have you ever behaved badly and blamed it on your period?
Number 1.
Or you or somebody that you know?
No.
No, number 2. Mm. Number 2, no. Are you there?
Yes, the answer is no.
The answer is no. Number 3.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. Because I was going to remind you, you're under oath, ladies. Yeah, okay.
Number 4.
No.
Number 5.
No.
Now remember, we're saying anyone you've ever known.
Yeah, anyone you have personal.
Oh, okay, yes.
Okay. Maybe we should. Okay, so wait, let's do this again. You or someone you personally know, not, and they got to be a friend.
Yeah.
So let's just start at the beginning again. You have ever done something and blamed it on your period. You or someone who is firsthand knowledge, very close. Yes or no, number 1. Don't listen to the radio, please. Listen to the phone. Number 1. Number 2.
Yes.
Yes. Number 3.
Absolutely.
Number 4.
Yes.
Number 5.
Yes.
Number 6.
No.
Number 7.
Yes.
Number 8.
Yes.
9.
Oh, yeah.
10. Number 10.
Definitely.
Definitely. Number 11.
Yes.
Okay.
So 9 of 11 on that one.
9 of 11. Okay. Here's question number 2.
Have you or anyone you have personal knowledge of in your circle of friends ever acted helpless in the face of an unpleasant, if not physically demanding task, like dealing with a wild animal that's gotten inside the house?
Number 1.
No.
Number 1 says, I think no. I'm losing number 1. Number 2.
Yes.
3.
You bet.
I'm in love with 3.
Number 4. Number 4.
Oh, that's me. I'm sorry, that's me.
Yes.
Not me, but somebody else.
Yes, okay. Number 5.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
Number 6.
Yes.
7.
Yes.
8.
Absolutely.
9.
Not me, but somebody else.
10.
Damsel in distress here.
Number 11.
Yes.
Yes, okay. We are talking to 11 women aged 35 to 70, asking them questions about toxic femininity. Mm. Question 3.
Okay, they're going to get a little bit harder here.
Yeah, a little dicey.
Have you or anyone in your circle of friends coerced a man into sex even though he didn't really seem to want it?
Oh. Number 1.
I think we've lost number 1.
I think we've lost number 1. Whatever. Number 2.
No way.
Number 3.
Probably have made a sport out of it.
Number 4.
No.
5.
Never.
6.
No.
7.
Not that I recall.
Number 8.
No way.
9.
Not yet, but I'm newly single, so I'm on the bubble on this one. So down the road.
Number 10. Number 10.
Yes.
Yes, number 11.
All my men wanted it.
All right. Well, again, you can blame this on your awful friends. It's totally fine.
Yeah, you don't have to admit to it yourself.
Right. That's
all right.
Okay. Next one. Have you or anyone in your circle of friends over your life thought you were at liberty to do some sort of coercing because men always want it and should feel lucky anytime they get it?
No.
That's number 1.
Very good.
Yes.
Number 2.
Yes.
Number 3.
Come on. Absolutely. 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 Hands down.
We have to have another conversation with number 3.
We need to set up a podcast with number 3.
Right. Number 4.
I don't understand the question. Could you?
Yes, go ahead.
A lot of this goes back to the coercing. If you don't know anyone who's ever coerced someone or prodded them into sex, even though you weren't sure they were necessarily that much into it, did you justify that as, men always want it and they should be lucky anytime that they get it?
Yes.
Okay. Number five.
No.
Six.
Yes.
Seven.
Yes.
Eight. Seven and four. Seven and three should never get together.
They'd be driving off a cliff at the end of that movie.
Eight.
No.
Nine.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you are an instigator as well. Number 10.
No, not so much.
Okay, and number 11.
Absolutely.
Mm. Okay. Wow, okay. That was one of those that I thought, I could see it occasionally. What was the score on that?
Six out of the 11 said yes to that.
Six out of the 11.
Okay, next up, have you, or you can absolutely blame someone else in your circle of friends. If you've ever threatened to harm yourself if a man breaks up with you or doesn't want to see you anymore. Do you remember this from high school or college?
You or someone else. Number one.
No way.
Number two.
Oh, at the ripe age of 15, yes.
Number three.
Not a chance.
Number four.
No.
Five.
No, never.
Six.
I just did that last week.
Number seven.
No.
Eight.
No way.
Nine.
Hell no, but I had it done to me.
Ten. Right? By a woman or by a man?
By a man.
Okay. Mm. I did 10, 11.
No man's that important. Mm.
Good for you.
You actually skipped 10.
Oh, did I skip 10? Number 10.
I've known a couple people, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to 12?
Oh, do we have 12?
You
11.
Said you did.
Oh, well, we only have 11. I'm looking up, and I thought we had 12, but we only have 11.
Okay, next one. Now, these are going to get, these can be harsh. Again, think about back in your life, the friends that you've had, maybe made questionable choices. I know we've all had these friends, but we're going to get a little tough here. Any of these people that you've known in your life been physically abusive with a male partner, knowing you'd be unlikely to face any legal consequences?
Wow.
Oh, never.
Okay, there's number one. Number two.
No.
Three.
Yes.
I won't ask.
No. That's not you're not your role here. Is to
I know,
ask
I know, I know.
Us.
Number four.
No.
Five.
No, never.
Six.
Does pushing him down the stairs count?
Yes, it does. Six.
Oh.
Seven.
I do know one person, yes.
Mm. Eight.
I know one person and saw the evidence after it was over, yes.
Mm. Nine.
Does it count if you've been drinking?
Yes, it does.
The judge.
Yes. That was number nine?
Nine.
Number ten.
Number nine.
What did you say, number 10?
I know we're anonymous, but it was not me, but I do know someone. Mm.
Okay. Number 11.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow. That was higher than I expected.
A lot higher than I expected.
Okay. Two more, guys. And you're doing a great job blaming all your friends for everything. Okay. Have you or anyone in your circle of friends lied about being on birth control or faked a pregnancy scare to see how a man would respond?
Absolutely not.
Okay, number two.
Absolutely not.
Three.
Never.
Four.
No.
Five.
Yes.
Okay, six. Nobody has friends because
this one I feel is common.
Yeah, I know somebody who's done this.
I would have said this one was 15 out of 11.
Yeah, me too. Where are we at? Number six?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a friend that did that one.
Number seven?
No.
Eight?
No way.
Nine.
Good Lord, no.
Ten.
Quite a few, actually.
Yeah. 11.
Yes.
Mm. I thought that would be a lot higher.
Yeah, this is so common. It even happened on the documentary The Office.
It wasn't a documentary.
And then finally, okay, this is, again, you or your circle of friends. Have any of them ever manipulated a divorce or a child custody dispute in your favor or in their favor by falsely insinuating that a man had been abusive to you or your child? Again, your circle of friends would count in this as well.
After 41 years, no way.
You have good friends.
Number two.
No.
Three.
Not for me, and truly not for anybody I know.
Four.
I say no, but I bet the liberals will answer these questions much differently than us.
I was just thinking that I think with a younger group, it may be different. With those under 35, and also I think with a group of different, you know, set of values. Okay, so what number were we at? Number five, I think?
Yeah.
Number five.
Yes, but it was reversed. It was a man who was doing it to the woman.
Okay,
okay, that doesn't count. Mm-hmm. Okay, number six?
No.
Number seven?
No.
Eight?
No, and if they did, they would no longer be my friend.
Good for you.
Nine?
I echo her sentiments exactly, so no.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, dear.
10.
You're welcome.
Yep, ditto.
And 11.
Yes, sadly.
So can I ask just...
11 was yes?
Yes, sadly, okay. She said. Can I ask, do you believe that toxic femininity exists, ladies? You can just...
Yes. Absolutely. Yes.
100%.
Absolutely. 100%. Women can be about it. Women can be.
All right, ladies. It was a yes or no question.
This isn't a party line.
Please define for me what is toxic femininity.
I think the things that they're saying about toxic masculinity, that there are guys that are jerks and will use, they're self-centered. They'll do whatever they want to get what they want. I think that is not a male problem. It's like not racism. It's a human problem.
Yes,
exactly.
Absolutely. Over the age of 45.
There we go.
All right, here we go.
Full sentences will not work in this format. We got to break, but thank you. That was great.
Ladies, hang on the phone. I want to send each of you, give the producer your name. I want to send each of you an autographed copy of my new book. But thank you for being on.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Steve Dace has put out a new book called Truth Bombs, which, Steve, the reaction to Truth Bombs, do people want the truth?
Yes and no. I think where we're at now, with Trump listening to conservative media, and going back to his original pledge not to sign another continuing resolution and forcing this confrontation and watching how the Republican Party never wanted this confrontation en masse whatsoever.
Yes.
I think the timing of that is almost serendipitous to providential, because I think there's a new audience for the message of this book, Glenn, that probably wouldn't have existed even 6 months ago.
Yeah, I think that... while there's lots of things that Donald Trump has done that we like, we never really got to the root of the problem that the Republican Party, none of them wanted to get rid of Obamacare. None of them really wanted to do anything about the border. It's just a game that they continue to play with us over and over and over again, and they usually have no spine. But because Donald Trump listens to the people, I think, he has stood strong on this and knew I'm toast if I don't. And I think it's opening up a whole new world.
When I wrote this book, I wanted to minimize Trump's role in this drama intentionally, because I don't think the cake has changed. You know, I say this on my daily show on The Blaze all the time. The cake is still the same. We just have this zany new frosting on top of it called Trump.
Right.
It's the same political cake that it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spend one chapter in the book. I go into all of my history with Trump, how he tried to woo me to support him early in his presidential run. And I did that on purpose because one of the major themes in this book is Trump is neither the problem nor the solution. He is the symptom. Frankenstein's monster doesn't create itself. If Trump is everything his detractors claim he is, Glenn, he can only be in the position he is in right now if the system is everything guys like you and I were saying it was before Trump ever came down that escalator. He exploited what the system has become to his own advantage. And he speaks for a base of people. You know, for most of his adult and public life, Trump has been one of the fair-haired set. And now he's watched as they've turned on him. The Jay-Z's, the LeBrons, the Snoop Dogg, the people that couldn't wait to get their picture taken with him before. Mm-hmm. The minute he put an R after his name and spoke directly to the values of Main Street America, and whether he did it because he believed it or political opportunism or a little bit of both, it didn't matter. Once he provided a platform to Main Street America, suddenly all these people turned on him because it isn't about Trump. It's about the hatred for the base of everyday Americans that he represents. And the only in my 10 plus years of working full time in political activism on campaigns from president to school board, I've learned one truth among many that stands above the rest. And that's this. The only political party in America that hates everyday Americans, conservatives, orthodox religious believers more than the Democrats are the Republicans.
What makes you say that?
Look at the way they behave. And in this book, I knew people were going to ask questions when I made statements like that. So there's 10 pages of footnotes in this book. There's over 140 footnotes in this book. To borrow a biblical phrase, so that no one is with, no one is without, or no one has an excuse. Okay. So The reality is, look at the way they behave. In fact, let's just go to the, I could point out primaries, how they always come out harder after us than they do Democrats. But let's just look at what Mitt Romney did the day he arrived in Washington as a would-be senator before he was sworn in. So this is a guy that goes to work every day in the Senate. And surrounding him are people who think it's a great idea and enlightened to take a pair of forceps, shove them up a woman's uterus, essentially attach them to the skull of her child, penetrate it, smash it so they then can vacuum out the baby's brains and the rest of its parts limb by limb. And now his concern is Trump's – he has nothing to say. All those problems that all those people represent, he's silent. But now Trump's problems are the ones that he needs to address immediately in the pages of the Washington Post. Trump's moral problems are well documented. But the reality is Trump's moral problems right now aren't getting in the way of you and me earning a paycheck or living in a society that is worthy of passing on to our children. People that want to suck the brains out of little babies, their lack of integrity and their moral problems, they're the ones getting in the way of that. And so here we see Mitt Romney in the last 2 weeks has gone harder after Donald Trump than he did the entire final 6 months of the general election campaign go after Barack Obama. And we have seen this pattern over and over again because Democrats inspire their base to get what they want, Glenn. Republicans conspire against their base to get what they want. The Republicans want to beat Democrats in elections, just not for the same reasons we want to beat them. And in the end, if the choice is losing to Democrats or losing control of the Republican Party, they will choose losing to Democrats. And I'll make one final point on this. Look at the Never Trump thing that you and I were originally part of. So most the guys like you, me, Shapiro, Erickson, there was a group of us who like, this guy's moral problems are way too high to gamble that he'll provide any conservative return on investment whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It's not worth risking the capital. Well, what we're finding out now that Trump has actually moved more to the right than we ever thought as president, look at the Bill Kristols. Look at the people that populate CNN and MSNBC. And what you're going to find is with their complaints about Trump's boorish behavior were a camouflage, a cover. Most of our old Never Trump movement were people that were actually never conservative.
I would agree with you on that wholeheartedly. And you know, because those people will not say anything good about him. If look, my concerns, and I said this on the air, my concern was I don't think he's going to do any of these things because he's never shown a willingness to stand up to those kinds of things and stand up and fight for him. That's not who he's ever been. But he is listening. He is. I will tell you this. I think this president it might be the biggest servant president we have had in the last 20 years, perhaps. Maybe George Bush. But what I mean is, and no, I can't even say George Bush, listening to the people who voted for him. I don't think he wanted to shut down the government. I don't think he wanted to do all of this. That wasn't his first instinct. But he saw the writing on the wall and he realized that's what they put me in for. Okay, I'm going to stand. And, you know, people are telling him every day you're losing your shirt. I don't think he is. I think he's actually winning because no one has ever stood with the people against the system.
I agree with that. And, you know, I've said this before, and let me say it again. And since Reagan left the national stage, and Reagan left the national stage in January of 1989, I was not yet legal to get a driver's license. And I have a senior in high school, oldest child right now. And so we're still talking about Reagan. And that's a generation before even Al Gore invented the internet. To tell you, and I bring that up to point out that what you and I are talking about is true, because I would argue since Reagan left the national stage, for all his faults, and I don't hide from any of Trump's faults. I don't know what in the Sam Hill Rudy Giuliani was doing on CNN last night. I don't know what that was. Okay,
what the hell? I have no idea.
I don't know why he hired guys like Paul Manafort, who were complete, Putin clowns. Right. I don't know the answers to those questions, but here's what I do know. The only Republican in a leadership position in the last 25 years that has even been the slightest sensitive to sympathetic to the core concerns of the average Republican base voter is Donald Trump, not the two Bushes that were president, not Mitt Romney, the previous two presidential nominees, not McConnell, not McCarthy, not Scalise, not Paul. All we did with Paul Reiner and John Boehner, Glenn, we traded a chain smoker for a CrossFitter, but we got everything else.
Yep.
So he's the only guy that cares what we think. And this is why, if you're wondering, why are people so loyal to him? There is a political cult aspect to it, and all politicians have it, and I've talked about that too. But a lot of it is, as we just saw before Christmas, if Rush Limbaugh goes on the air and trashes Kevin McCarthy, he's not doing a dang thing. He did it to Donald Trump, and dude said, you know what? We're going to have to reverse course here. He's the only one who cares what we think, Glenn. He's the only one.
I agree with you, Steve. I actually agree with you. I don't think Donald Trump is the leader in the traditional sense. But I don't think that necessarily that's what America wants anymore. Right now, they want someone who will listen to them, because I think the common sense of the average person is better than any leader that I have found. And for all of his faults, he is listening to his people and to America. And I think that with all of his faults, that's exactly what we may need at this time to be able to save the republic. Let's go over, I think your book is really important because we have to prepare ourselves for 2020 and 2024. Mm-hmm. And I think these parties are imploding, but people mm-hmm. will say, and you cover this in your book, you got to vote for the Republican. You know, it's too hard for a third party. And you take those things apart. Start with a third party.
The number one reason we don't have a third party, and there's other reasons, I didn't say it was the only one, but the number one reason we don't is there's just too much damn money to be made shilling and pimping the Republican Party. That's why. And that's just the reality. Careers get made. Food gets put on the table. There are whole people that is it Manu Rajay, I believe is his name. He's essentially Mitch McConnell's stenographer. I mean, he essentially walks into Mitch McConnell's office. He tells him what to write, what to say, what today's lead is from GOP Senate leadership. And that's a quote unquote story. And this goes on. And we have too many conservative blogs that are essentially facsimiles and stenographers for certain donor blocks of the Republican Party or factions of the GOP. And this has devolved into the click servative, notion mm-hmm. that we've seen in the last few years. There's just too much money to be made in maintaining the status quo. And that's why, you know, one of the examples when I knew we were screwed is I was on the air every night in Louisville on my old syndicated show live, and I had Matt Bevin on my show all the time when he was trying to primary Mitch McConnell. And at that time, I was doing a lot of interviews as kind of your token conservative on MSNBC panels and stuff, mm-hmm. and we would talk about this primary all the time. And I'm like, I think Bevin's going to win. I mean, everybody hates McConnell. Bevin's, you know, got his own money to spend. He's well-known. He's a great candidate, and he's such a good candidate. He's the governor of Kentucky now. We got to primary night. Several friends of mine worked on this campaign, so I knew what was going on the inside. We get to primary night, and you look at the turnout. Now, Kentucky's a state where I think twice in the last 20 years, the Democrat nominee for president didn't even get 40% of the vote statewide in a presidential election. It's a pretty red state. We get to primary night, and more people voted in the Democratic Senate primary than voted in the Republican Senate primary that night, despite all the media attention, except you know where all the media attention was? On CNN and MSNBC, which our base doesn't consume. I went and Googled Fox. I went to FoxNews.com. I Googled Matt Bevin, Mitch McConnell, got like no results. Rush never talked about it. It never shows up on the front page of Drudge. And so here we are with a vastly superior candidate to McConnell, not some local yokel who believes in chemtrails, a guy who's the freaking governor of the state right now, okay? And we couldn't turn out our voters because they didn't even know he existed, Glenn. And this is why we can't ever beat these guys in these primaries. This is why whoever tells you, hey, we're going to launch a 10-year war to take back the Republican Party. You know, one of my good friends is one of the original donors of the GOP from the old Sharon statement. He once told me, Steve, I've been fighting for, you know, we've been fighting for taking over the Republican Party for 50 years. And I told him, brother, with all due respect, I don't want to do this for 50 years. And the country doesn't have 50 years. So the biggest problem we have is this. Corporate America has turned against us in the last generation. There aren't any more Lee Iacocca's anymore who either supported our values or were willing to fund them because they understood that Democrats were terrible for their economic model. What's happened now is youth soccer economics have taken over Wall Street. Progressivism is in every boardroom. They're now funding all the cultural causes we're against. And they've decided, you know what, instead of fighting big government, we just buy it off and they make you buy our health insurance if we do that.
Well, I will tell you this. That started because of Reagan in, I think it was 1986 or 88, with the Tides Foundation. That was their goal. They learned through Reagan. We've got too many people in boardrooms that are conservative. We have too many people running companies that are conservative. We need to get people at the highest echelons of corporate America and take over from there. And they've done it, and they did it effectively. Mm-hmm. And anytime you ever talk about it, it's a conspiracy theory, but it's well documented. That's what they set out to do. When you talk to Republicans about that, they want nothing to do with it. They're like, that won't work, and I'm not in it for that long. I'm just going to put my money behind this guy. The problem is that socialists and those who want to destroy this country think long term. We don't. If you want to think long term and know the truth about yourself, your argument, our side, the conservative movement. How do we win in 2020? How do we win in 2024? And how do we save the nation? The book is Truth Bombs by Steve Dace. Truth Bombs, Steve Dace. He'll tell you more about it after this program on the Blaze Radio and Television Network. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. And don't forget, rate us on iTunes. Stephen Baldwin is here in studio, an actor in a new movie called The Least of These. Let me start with this. Have you ever gone to Walmart and been in one of their little riding, you know, shopping carts while drinking any kind of wine out of a Pringles can? And do you look down on those people that do that?
At this time, Glenn, my only response can possibly be,
yeah,
sir, I am not aware of any such activity,
yeah, right.
Nor if I were,
right.
I most definitely could not disclose such
right.
activity
right.
In any kind of a public broadcasting.
Yeah. How are you? I haven't seen you in a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen you, but I haven't seen you face to face.
You too. And yeah. Gosh, there's a whole bunch I want to say to you. First, I want to start with quit monkeying around. January? Really, guys?
Yeah. No,
really?
It's not our idea.
Really?
We're against it.
Uh-huh.
We're saying stop.
Mm-hmm.
We're also, I will say.
But quit monkeying around, Glenn. Okay?
No, just picking it out, picking stuff out of other people's fur. Listen, there is, you know, there's important stuff to
so
talk
to speak.
About. Yes, there's important stuff to talk about. This world has gone insane.
Buddy?
Insane.
When Stephen Baldwin sits at the mic with you this many years later on yeah. The Blaze, and God bless you for your success.
Thank you.
By the way, the interview is over in 10 seconds. Do I get one share of stock after the new merger? Just one. Larry?
No.
God bless him. See, he knows how to do it.
What's negotiating. You just don't give, I just don't give one share away for it.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry,
Baldwin.
Time, maybe.
Leave if you want, Buster Brown. It's my show.
So tell me about the movie you're in.
The Least of These, and the website, forgive me, is leastofthese.movie, not .com. Leastofthese.movie, is the biographical story of an Australian missionary named Graham Staines, who in 1999 was murdered along with his two very young boys. He had been there for 15 years as a doctor with a medical clinic treating the ailing leprosy epidemic, which in the Hindi faith is a curse. He was a born-again Christian, but very conservative, and in the platform of that medical facility, he would evangelize, which is legal when asked about your faith. Mm-hmm. So then the writer of this particular screenplay was very smart to take all of that based on the true life story and then create a really interesting fictional story about an Indian journalist hired by a newspaper to try to expose the truth and this and that. And it's this guy's journey of learning who this man was and is and this. So now it's kind of like this more of a theatrical adaptation of the, but it communicates who the guy was and the tragedy and the loss. And then his widow wife, Gladys, who's alive today, the first response she had to the media after the events was, "We just want all of India to know we forgive the people who have done this."
I love those people. So, I love people that forgive after the unforgivable. They just forgive the unforgivable.
And that happens sometimes, but in this instance, it really sent a shockwave in 99 across India. And the perpetrators were caught and tried, and the one lead guy was hung, went to prison and then was hung, as I understand it.
Why'd they kill him?
I'm sorry?
Why did they kill him? Just because of he was talking about his faith, or?
Yeah, I think that he just was so within their culture, as conservative as he was. I just think he was just so peaceful. He was a threat. You know what I mean?
It's just, and that's wild in India, Gandhi, the home of Gandhi.
Right. But when you get, you know, there's a couple bad apples usually in every bunch. And if you're a Hindi radical.
Yeah, yeah.
Saying, hey, wait, no, he's really using that as a cover. And these people are causing problems in our faith, in our region.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, this is.
Yeah.
So that's the story. But as you know, you hear those, I love people who do that thing.
Mm-hmm.
But really, this guy's story, he's one of the anomalies in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
That really now, on the 25th anniversary, Larry, or 20th anniversary of that incident, God bless me and my mathematical prowess.
I can't believe it. I mean, it's 20 years since 1999.
Yeah.
20 years. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
It's amazing.
We're apparently we're still looking good, Glenn.
Yeah. No, I'm not. You are. I'm not. But that's a different. That's a different story.
That's the overall crux.
Yeah.
And now we've done this film adaptation, and it's. I'm not even joking around here. It's kind of already with churches and, you know, communities and socially going a little bit viral. He's kind of one of the, within the world of global missionaries, he's kind of an icon. You know, he was just one of these guys that really walked the walk, talked the talk, but then lost his life. Tragically.
This is going to be a Fathom event, premiering.
Day of January, and then the next day it goes 700 screens.
Wow. Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
So, movies have changed, haven't they? I mean,
mind-bogglingly so.
Yeah. I mean, it's the
9,000 new titles come out a month.
9,000 a month?
1,000?
Correct. 9,000 feature films are globally distributed on some form of distribution worldwide per month.
That's crazy.
Oh my God.
Did you see Netflix is, what did I tell you? Spending $3 billion
Correct.
In programming.
Yeah.
And I think they're a billion dollars hemorrhaging $1 billion a year now. I mean, it's just, I don't know how these things are going to last.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But we are in a time when if you want to make a movie, you can make a movie.
That's why you got to make movies that communicate the gospel, yeah. My friend.
When did you become, tell me real quickly, your story of when you became, that was the most important thing in your life?
To encapsulate that, I've been a pretty kooky kid most of my life.
Uh-huh.
Skydiver. I'm 52 now. I'm still riding a skateboard. And I just have been more of that, you know, when you hear the boom, some look to it and run towards it. Or yeah. Some people run away. I'm a run towards the problem uh-huh. kind of guy. But not the same kind of guy I used to be, Justin.
Yeah, yeah. It used to be. You were a hard-living
guy.
There's
some fights I don't pick anymore, Glenn.
Yeah.
So I just say that because I did everything you were supposed to do according to becoming a born-again, scripturally what that mm-hmm, means. Mm-hmm. Nicodemus, the whole conversation. Mm-hmm. And I went to God and I just said, look, my wife just got saved and this is cute, but I'm Stephen Baldwin.
So God said, oh, I forgot.
So I'll give you the punchline on this yeah. in a minute. And I said, Lord, you know, you created me. I got some talents and this, that's all. You know, I'm a good kisser. My wife loves me. But ha, ha, ha. And I said, but the greatest peace I have found is plunging towards the planet at 120 feet per second. That's mm-hmm. my what's up.
Right.
That's cool to me. And I've done that 300 times. So I said to the Lord, if it ain't better than that, and I've had a good run mm-hmm. for a mm-hmm. dumb kid from Massapequa.
Mm-hmm.
So I made this covenant. I said to the Almighty, here's the deal. If you reveal yourself to me in a way that I know it's you and it's better than that, you'll have a pit bull on the front lines. Trust me. And he kept his end of the deal. There really was never a moment that clicked. There was just some prophetic experiences I've had that just, it only could have been him,
mm-hmm.
you know? And not everybody's down for that. But, you know, some people just want it once a week on Sunday and this, but I'm not built like that.
Yeah, I'm kind of an all or nothing kind of guy, too.
I had to go all the way or, mm-hmm. or nothing at all. And just waves of experience I could tell you about that. Even mm-hmm. this film was difficult, you know, because I had to learn to talk like an Australian.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And mm-hmm. good to see you, Glenn.
Right, right.
How are you, mate?
Right.
You know, you have to... Uh-huh. I had to go through my process as an actor and create the character and find it. And we were on location in India. So it was difficult, but... God told me to do the movie. So regardless of all that, regardless of haha, and you'll appreciate this when I say things like you've struggled to do your thing as you felt your heart lead you.
Correct.
And why do you think I asked for the one share of stock? I told Larry coming in, I said, God bless these guys. Cause I love that merger and mm-hmm. I think that's going to get blessed.
I do too.
I think that's super cool.
I do too. It's good to have you here.
Thanks, man.
Okay, so the movie is happening on January 31st.
February 1st.
Oh, February
1st. Is the theatrical release right. in 700 screens. The night before, you can catch a sneak peek on Fathom.
Yeah, Fathom event, so you can find out if it's playing on a Fathom event near you. You can also find out more about the movie, theleastofthese.movie, theleastofthese.movie, and you can follow Stephen Baldwin at Stephen Baldwin 7. Thank you, Stephen.
Good to have you guys.
Good
Thanks.
To talk to you.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.